We're less than a week away from the clash at Bowman Gray. Hi, I'm Doug Rice, and welcome to Fast Talk.
Fast Talk on the Performance Racing Network is brought to you by Toyota. For the latest Toyota Gazoo racing information, visit TGRNA.com. And by Sunoco. From NASCAR to your car, Sunoco helps your car reach peak performance. Now, here's the host of Fast Talk, Doug Rice.
Welcome to Fast Talk. I'm Doug Rice, joined as usual by Brad Gilley and Alexis Erickson. As we said in the tease, we're less than a week away from the clash at Bowman Gray. But before we look forward, let's take a quick peek over our shoulder. Brad Gilley, I don't know an off-season of NASCAR racing that has been this busy and this news-filled.
You know, it's interesting talking to a lot of people, Doug, just around the industry. And I really thought this was going to be a longer-feeling off-season because we had the award ceremony right after the Phoenix season finale. Every single person says it like we're on racetrack time. It feels like yesterday that Kyle Larson was hoisting a trophy above his head, and this upcoming week, we're going to be back to racing. It has flown by so fast, in some ways in a good way, in other ways, I could use another month on the calendar.
And Alexis, we had major stories throughout the off season. I think everyone's had a chance to digest what came down from the NASCAR court dates. But then more recently, we finally found out that what is old is new again, and the chase is back in the news.
Yeah, you know, I think this is most likely going to go down as one of the most, influential, if you will, off seasons in the history of NASCAR, to be honest with you, because there were so many big things that came down in such a short period of time. Obviously, the historic settlement between the teams and NASCAR for the charter agreements, and then you have, you know, this chase coming back. And I personally love it. I think that it is, as a lot of people have said, and I don't want to take words out of other people's mouths, but it's true. It's a happy medium. I think it's something that everybody who has a stake in what happens on the racetrack and how a champion is decided, it has a little something for everybody. And that's, you know, that's really what you need is a compromise. And I think this turned out to be a really perfect compromise. We'll see as the year goes on, how the storylines progress and how things, seem to go in this new chase format. But it's going to be exciting, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Brad Gilley, I was amazed, frankly, so much stock is put in the Jeff Gluck poll that 80% of the respondents went, yeah, I'm fine with what NASCAR did with bringing back the chase. You never get an 80-20 issue in NASCAR.
You know, to Alexis' point, this sort of checks everyone's box in a lot of ways, which is a good thing. Look, I was fine with the old playoffs format, but I could see where things needed to be adjusted. This gets us about as close to a 36-race season as you could get without it actually being that. This is the one thing I love, and this is where I think The I'm the quote-unquote pure race fan, and I want to see race 1 to race 36, and we decide the champion. Hey, we get a little bit of a reset after 26 races, and that kind of tightens the field up again. But stage racing stays, and that's the big thing that I like, because in any sport, whether it's a quarter in football, a period in hockey, a half in any other sport, something like that, anytime you're counting down to something, it puts an emphasis. But this is what's great about it. The old chase format, you had a big penalty for a bad finish. That penalty for a bad finish outweighed the reward of a good finish. So I think you saw a lot of people talking about their good points day and racing more conservatively. Now, with stage points in play, plus the fact that we've added an extra 15 points to the race-winning driver, this makes them go. This makes them go from the green flag to the checkered flag, and now you can have that reward for a good day that might match the penalty you would have for a bad day. I love it. I'm so thrilled with everything that they did with this.
I like the 15-point cushion. It's 5 more than 10. Really makes a difference at the end of the day. Alexis, was there anything else that you would have liked to have seen in the newly revised point system heading into 2026?
You know, I'm not really sure that there is. I know that's kind of like a cop-out answer, but we've talked about this but amongst ourselves privately for months because it's been such a hot topic of conversation. And I saw the flaws in the old system, but I also saw the things that I liked about it that made things exciting, that gave us as media members storylines and things to talk about. And this is going to allow us to shift maybe who we put our focus on. There was a lot of talk about, oh, well, you're talking about the 16th place driver. Are you talking about the guys on the cut line? And you're not really talking about, you know, the guys that are out there, winning races and gathering all these points. And so things are going to shift from our perspective. But I think that's going to be a great thing for the sport.
I was hoping, Brad Gilley, for a throwback, maybe to get a point if you led a lap, meaning you could only collect it one time per race. And I knew I was Moses wandering around with sackcloth and ashes in the wilderness, but I was pretty happy overall.
You know what? I would be totally on board with that and reward the most points for, or the more points for the driver who leads the most laps. But one thing I think was a big emphasis on this, simplify it. You know, the elevator pitch. If you got in the elevator with someone, you could explain to them exactly how everything works by the time you got to the 20th floor. In fact, I think Steve O'Donnell mentioned that Ryan McGee had brought that up, or Tim Clark did in one of the meetings right there. And that's where we are. We don't have any extra stuff that we have to over-explain.
Talk to Ryan McGee. He verified that.
Well, I was just going to say the best thing that I saw after the announcement was made about the new format was, Doug, your tweet that said, now we don't have to look at and sift through multiple point standings. And to Brad's point, when you're talking about simplifying things, not only for the fans, which, you know, obviously that's super important, but for us too, as we talk about this and bring all of this information to the fans, that was one thing that I was like, yes.
It's going to be a lot easier for fans to consume the point standings moving forward, and that's a good thing. Of course, with every year, there are new opportunities and changes. I retired a couple of years ago. Mark Garrow stepped away from the broadcast booth this past year, and that opens up opportunities for other folks. And on this show, we will spend a couple of segments talking with David Stiles and Andrew Curlin. They are taking over the duties of PRN's daily news program, Garage Pass, and you'll hear them on other products too. So, Andrew and David will be dropping by, along with the fact Brad Gilley talks with Hall of Famers Kurt Busch and Harry Gant. And that's all coming up on this edition of Fast Talk.
Listen up, fellow timeshare owners. If you're a timeshare owner and you want out at all costs, you're done, frustrated, tired of wasting money, you don't use the darn thing. Get out now. Hire the timeshare cancellation team in the business. Their in-house legal team, headed by a timeshare cancellation lawyer, can help you fight the biggest and baddest companies out there that sell timeshare. At some point, you were using your timeshare, but now you're not, and you're tired of wasting money. Before you go to the poorhouse, call right now and learn how you can stop the maintenance fees and put more money back in your pocket. Their services cost you a lot less than you think, and you'll save a lot of money over time. Call the Timeshare Exit Hotline now. It's a free consultation.
800-890-5957. 800-890-5957. 800-890-5957. That's 800-890-5957.
I'm Kyle Busch, and you're listening to Fast Talk on the Performance Racing Network.
These cars are about to fire it off in anger.
Logano back across the stripe. Now Zane Smith putting on some pressure.
Side by side, Austin Cindric has him at the line, and he will take the lead into one.
Boy, what a save! We got cars sideways. It's Christopher Bell. He spins and collects a couple cars. Here comes Shane Van Gisbergen on the bottom. He's looking for second.
Now Chris Buescher fired out of a cannon at turn two. He's right into the rear bumper of Ty Gibbs. Which way is he going to go?
Oh, it's a multi-car accident. I want to say 15, 20 cars. Looks like Austin Cindric is involved. Denny Hamlin. Guys, that took out about two-thirds of the field.
We have a fight on pit road between two crew guys. One of them is with Ty Gibbs. One is with Brad Keselowski.
Brad Keselowski will see the white flag as he drives under the start-finish line.
Chase Elliott has battled at the front all night long. He's won the war. Chase Elliott has just punched his ticket to the playoff.
Awesome job, man. Awesome. Thank you guys so much.
This is PRN.
Coming up, we're going to talk with Kurt Busch, a 34-time winner in the NASCAR Cup Series and the 2004 champion. Kurt, congratulations on being inducted into the NASCAR Hall of Fame. How's it feel?
It's amazing. Really just at the pinnacle of the sport, you know, and to be chosen with this group and to be part of the NASCAR Hall of Fame, I'm just completely blown away. An amazing journey for this little blue collar kid from Vegas who had a dream.
Look, you had an amazing career and so many different highlights. We're going to talk about some of them. I am curious, ever since the nomination came in last year that you were going to be inducted coming up here this weekend, what are you asked about the most about your career?
You know, it was fun going down memory lane with all of my crew chiefs and team owners. And, you know, I would call, I called Doug Yates because there was a story I remember from Bristol one year and I just wanted to verify it. Right. And, you know, a 20-minute conversation turns into an hour and it's like, wow, where'd that time go by? And it's just, it's fun to reminisce it all and to soak it all in and just share it with everyone that helped me for the 30 years that I was in a car.
All right, so Bristol is actually the site of your first win, and you ended up going to Victory Lane there six times. Five of those was like an era where you pretty much owned that track. What was it that that you and Jimmy had going on, Jimmy Fennig at the time?
Man, it was sweet. It was my first race with him at Bristol, and the car just cut, and it would just cut through the center of the corner like nothing else. And I think there's something about Bristol and my driving style. You know, it's very similar to my brother, Kyle Busch. His driving style fits that track. And I think it's because we can run the car so loose and keep it underneath us. And that allows us to maneuver in traffic and not get hung up when we're behind people. And so I think it was just something with our driving style. I don't know. It was cool that, you know, I had teammates like Mark Martin to learn from and Matt Kenseth, Biffle, you know, the whole gang. We were so strong in the early 2000s.
All right, some things I love about your career. First, you came in the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series, and you came pretty close to being a rookie champion, which was a pretty neat thing. Take us back to those early days and being a young kid from Las Vegas, Nevada, coming into the NASCAR world and really trying to carve your path at the time and doing it with great success. What was going on back then?
Yeah, the era of Biffle and I in the trucks, you know, is something very special. You know, I got a big break to get from Southwest Tour, which I got a big break to get to Southwest Tour from my dad's racing equipment. But it was just the work ethic that my dad instilled in me, the teammates, the work that we put in, and it prepared me for the trucks. And man, it was just like when I jumped into the truck, it was like putting on a driver's suit that I had worn forever. It just fits so good. And finished second at Daytona, second at Bakersfield right away. Didn't quite win until Milwaukee mid-season, but that's when we really started rolling. That's when Biffle and I kind of transcended the teammate aspect of NASCAR, where we were very transparent. We were, of course, confident in our own skills, but confident to know we could beat our teammate by sharing information. And so that's something I'll remember, and I think that's a pretty proud statement from my days in the trucks.
Yeah, you know what? That's pretty interesting. And, you know, you would go on to go straight to the Cup Series. Biffle would go on to win a Truck Series championship, you know, a championship in what's the O'Reilly Series. And y'all spent a lot of time as teammates, which is pretty amazing. But I think what shocked people at the time heading into the 2001 season was that, you know, here was this young Kurt Busch that we were like, man, what a great story is going on. And it's great to see a big points battle. And the next thing you know, you skip what was in the Busch Series and go straight to Cup. So how did that come about? And I don't know, was this like a wide-eyed awesome or was it like a terrifying moment? Like, oh my gosh, I've got to dive right into the big league.
It was everything that you just mentioned. Yeah, Jack Roush came to me, and I can't remember if it was before we even won in the trucks at Milwaukee or if it was just after, but it was in July-ish, and he said, hey, you want to go Cup racing? I'm like, yeah, sure, you know, a couple years, you know, a couple more in truck, a couple more in the Busch Series or, you know, the O'Reilly Series. He goes, no, we're going to take you straight to Cup this September. If you're going to make mistakes, I want you to make them at the top level. We're going to bring you to the show. I'm like, well, I'm ready if you're ready, but we're going to wreck a lot of stuff.
I like that. Hey, at least you set the expectation early on. Hey, look, as it would come to be, you actually won. You won the first chase. And I know the bigger story of the chase that gets talked about a lot, Kurt, is the fact that, you know, here you are coming onto pit road. It looks like your day is over, and all of a sudden the wheel falls off and the caution comes out at just the right time. I don't know that a lot of people remember the fact that five drivers went into that with literally a legit point shot to win it. Jimmy had just won Darlington, came in 18 points behind you, which that's like today's equivalent of being 3 points back. Jeff Gordon was a part of it. Mark Martin, Dale Earnhardt Jr. I mean, everyone in today's points were probably within about 20, 25 points of each other. And going into that race, you'd already started the chase with the win at New Hampshire, but realizing that you're going up with not only seasoned veterans, but also in another young driver who would go on to be a champion as well in Jimmy Johnson. What was going on back then?
Yeah, that was an exciting time for our sport. And I really embraced the new format. And I think a few of the drivers were a bit agitated by it and didn't absorb it. Like, if you get complacent, the sport will leave you behind. And I looked at it and I come dug in deep with stats and numbers. I talked to Jimmy Fenning, and the way we positioned ourselves was we saved all of our tests, or as many test sessions as possible, for the playoff races. Back then, you could test about six times during the year, and you could do it 10 days before the event. And so we were at every track in between those 10 races, testing every week, preparing as close as we could to the end. And We wore ourselves out, though. That was a tough stretch physically, mentally, cars, equipment, people. But we were ready, and our game plan unfolded perfectly. We came in and won New Hampshire to set the tone. And then it was a matter of just building points. And then about the last three races, it was, okay, let's just hang on to our points. Let's just go for 10th because we should be able to hold them off. It was a perfectly executed plan, kind of like a Trojan horse approach.
It was pretty neat. You know, one of the other ways you've really left a mark on this sport, it's not the 34 wins in the Daytona 500 and All-Star and Coke 600 in the same season, all those things. But among those 34 victories, the amount of teams that you did it for, and when we talk about Kurt Busch, one of the things we say about you is the fact that you pretty much made every team better when you went there. You know, you started at Roush, you went to Penske and won. You won at SHR, that's your Daytona 500. You won at Ganassi, 23-11. You darn near won with James Finch in a pretty amazing drive at Sonoma Raceway, and you almost won with Furniture Row, maybe should have, had it not been for a camera falling on the racetrack in the Coca-Cola 600. Every team you went to, you made better, Kurt. What kind of a mark is that, do you feel?
It's something I'm proud of, and didn't realize that was unfolding when it was happening. It was showing up and putting in that work and creating stronger communication with some of the teams that were a bit younger, or some of the teams that hadn't had that power, like a Roush or a Penske. You know, a couple team departures were definitely my fault, but then to rebound and reset and to choose to go to James Finch and to put the fun back in racing, so to speak, that was my version of reset and work up the ladder system. And it allowed me to meet a lot of new people, to help young engineers, young crew members develop. And it was just a fun time because I also had Monster Energy with me. When you have a great sponsor that's able to roll with you, that's where some of the extra teams popped up because of some politics here or there. But, you know, it was a blessing. I've won with nine different crew chiefs, or you could say nine drug me to victory lane. It was really a special second half of my career.
Man, we could talk about so many things, from you winning your first ever O'Reilly Auto Parts Series race to, any number of big wins and all of that. But we know it's a busy week for you with the NASCAR Hall of Fame. And just want to close and say, Kurt, congratulations. This is so well earned, so well deserved. And it's great to celebrate your career here this week, and really as the Hall of Fame lives on.
Well, I really appreciate that. It's truly an honor, and to be in the hall with 67, I believe, members are currently in the Hall of Fame. Not bad for a blue collar kid from Vegas, where we were just out there having fun with our little dwarf cars. We never expected to go towards Cup, but it all just unfolded in a magical way.
Awesome. Well, enjoy the blue jacket, everything that goes along with an induction to the Hall of Fame, and we're going to enjoy talking to you a whole lot here, over the next several years in the future, Kurt. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it. Thanks again.
All right, there he is, 2004 NASCAR Cup Series champion and now Hall of Famer Kurt Busch.
We work hard to keep our cars looking great on the outside, but engine components need our attention too. That's where you can trust Z-Max Micro Lubricant to disperse carbon buildup in your engine and fuel system. Keep your car or truck running at its peak. By soaking into the metal of your engine, Z-Max Micro Lubricant improves performance, extends engine life, and reduces emissions. Trust the many customers who've said, "Thanks for saving my engine." Find out more at ZMAX.com or follow us on Facebook and X.
When NASCAR hits Dover Motor Speedway, get ready for all-star intensity at the Monster Mile, May 15th through 17th. See the sport's biggest names battle it out. It's more than a race, concerts, autograph sessions, tailgates, and nonstop action all weekend long. Experience NASCAR the way it's meant to be, live and in person at Dover. Get your tickets now at DoverMotorSpeedway.com. That's DoverMotorSpeedway.com.
I'm Joey Logano, and you're listening to Fast Talk on the Performance Racing Network.
My fiancé is a veteran.
I did tours in Korea, Germany, and Bosnia before I got injured.
When Yusuf got out of the military, he needed help getting his disability benefits.
Luckily, DAV came to the rescue. They fought for me the same way that I fought for my country.
Every year, DAV provides life-changing support to more than a million veterans.
My victory is never giving up and finding more ways to serve.
He's pretty amazing.
Support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
Hi, this is Doug Rice of PRN. Join me for another great episode of Fast Talk.
We have NASCAR Hall of Famer Kurt Busch. What does a much older, wiser Kurt Busch want to tell Carson Hocevar?
Well, let's bust out all the VHS tapes, and you can watch all my mistakes. Try not to do those, Carson. I like what he's doing. He's learning, and he's putting his time in up front.
That's Fast Talk right here on PRN.
Welcome back to our special Hall of Fame edition. My name is Brad Gilley, and what an induction 2026 has been. Going in this year, legendary short track racer from the Southeast, Ray Hendrick, 2004 Cup Series champion Kurt Busch, and the man who we talk to now, the driver of the Skull Bandit for both Hal Needham and Leo Jackson, and most definitely one of NASCAR's most popular drivers of all time, Harry Gantt. Congratulations on being inducted into the NASCAR Hall of Fame. How does it feel to have such a great honor?
Well, it's something I don't have to every time I go eat at night. People come over to our table and say, "I voted for you," and so now they come over. If I go out, they come over, congratulate me. And so, but I really didn't plan ever even being in the Hall of Fame when I started racing in Winston Cup. I raced a lot of races. I think I won about 300 races, and I didn't really race. I mean, I won a lot more than I lost.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about your career. Okay, so here's one of the things I used to love, Harry. When Buddy Baker was still with us and co-host on the channel, anytime we'd talk about you, he obviously thought of you fondly. But he would always talk about the fact that, you know, this was the Buddy Baker legend of Harry Gantt. You know, well, Harry was the guy who'd go race on Sunday, and heck, he might win, but on Monday he's up roofing a house and doing things like that. So how much reality in your career is that legend? You know, when you were going after this full time, were you still in the construction business with your brother? Or what were you doing?
I was with me and my brothers together. I was together. I mean, my dad was together, and he passed away. And he's a big race fan, and we went everywhere. All the races around we went to, even Darlington. Went to Darlington 1955 and watched the race down there. And that was, I was just beside myself, you know, because we was running, getting cars ready to run Hickory Speedway, and it was dirt then. And it, it to see Junior. We built a lot of houses. I think we built all the Junior Johnson's Ken Boga house in Wilkes County. And I go to Junior's a lot. It's not that far from where I live. And he'd tell me, he'd tell me, you need to do this, you need to do that. I really hope someday I'd be driving for Junior. And I think I come pretty close the time that I was just getting started in and Daryl was driving. I thought I had an opportunity then. And he told me, he said, I promised Daryl if he got out of his deal that I didn't drive my car. And he said, I always stick to what my word. And he said, I'd be glad to talk with you about that. But that's the same time, you know, that Skull come in the picture there and decided to run two cars. And so everything worked out real good.
Yeah, yeah, it did before. Yeah, you know, what's interesting when, and you'd already run some full-time seasons, you know, with Jack Beebe, but when you hooked up with Hal Needham and Burt Reynolds to drive that Skull Bandit, Harry, you did this at an age where today in NASCAR, we're starting to ask drivers if they're ready to retire. For you, you know, you're already in your 40s, and literally this is when your career blossomed. Just take us back to that time in NASCAR, and I guess how different it was in that regard from what we see here today when, you know, we're talking about trying to put 17-year-olds in cup cars.
Well, you know, unless you're really associated with somebody, back then you had about four cars, you know, Good Brother, Junior, and Bobby Allison, and Petty's always. And if you wasn't in one of them, you wasn't going to win no race. Everybody, them four, when the Wood Brothers and all, they went in every week. And if you didn't get in with somebody, you would just be, as y'all saying, spinning your wheels trying to keep up with somebody like that. And so when Beebe called me, I had just finished a really good year in the Lake Model Sportsman Division. And I'd won 35 races that year, and I was second in the points. And Butch Lindy had won 35. And we go to Nashville and big race, 500 lap race. And so it rained the race out, and we all went to hotels. Jack Egan, Butch Lindy, and myself. I get up next morning, my car and truck all's gone, stole. Now I can't even run the race, and I qualified for the pole. My car, the race car and truck, was sitting in Atmore, Alabama. And so I called the police in Nashville, and they called down there, and they talked back and forth, and I could hear them. And they sent a patrolman out there, and it was sitting there, and I says, it got a race car number 77 on the back. And he said, ain't nothing behind it. It's just a truck.
Oh.
And I think they unloaded it in Nashville, but it's never been heard of ever since then. And so Butch, he had a backup car. He wanted me to qualify his backup car. So that's the last race that's going to decide the championship. We're 2 points apart. I didn't want to, but I finally did. Got in there. And I went on the racetrack. The way he had the throttle done, he had a valve turned upside down and a rod around the rod laying on the head of the valve. And the valve was hooked to the floorboard. So I go out there and so I pushed the throttle too hard, it pushed it over and it hooked underneath the valve. Second lap around on qualifying lap and drove straight into a wall.
Ooh.
Yeah. And that made me want to quit. So then Butch called me 2 weeks later. And he said he just didn't want to leave here with the championship. He didn't win the race there though at Nashville. And he said, and him win 35 races, and I win 35 races. I said, so? He said, they're going to run a 200-lap race in Kingsport, Tennessee, and then we drive his backup car. He had another car, a coal miner, owned those cars. He might have heard of that way back in that day.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to, but I really wanted to, too. So I told him I would, and we go up there. And both of us run Firestone tires, and we tested a lot of Firestone. And you really didn't have time to work much anymore, public work there. So I go up there, and Asheville, Bob Presley, he qualified on the pole with Leo Jackson's car, who, that's eventually, it was my car owner. And, you know, Leo's last part of his school car.
Mm-hmm.
Bush was second and I was third, 250 lap race. And so we raced there, and me and Bush ended up 1 and 2 at pit stops, 1 and 2. I'm running second, kept going. I got down to 10 laps to go, and I come on the radio. The coal miner was on the truck. And I said, the coal miner, I asked Gene Petty, the Firestone guy, has he got a radio on? He said, yeah. And I said, tell me, does he want me to pass Butch, or do you want me to let him run first? And he'll run 36, and I have 35 races. And the coal miner come on the radio and said, if you don't pass him, you'll never drive a car with me. That's one. So I passed old Butch. That's the last season I run, and then Beebe called me. I didn't know what I was going to do. So Jack Beebe called me, Bob Johnson. They had never run Western Cup. They'd run modifieds in Connecticut. It was in the last race that I drove for them in Atlanta, and we sat on the pole, did the whole 500 miles, got down to just a few miles to go. And ain't nobody in the lead lap but Cale Yarborough, and he's way back. Somebody spun out.
Oh.
About five laps to go or somewhere in that area, and they restarted. I'll go in the corner and I got a flat tire. But anyway, when I got ready to leave, I had to get out of there fast to get through the back gate to get to the airport back there.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to go to Winter Circle and get a check and all for being on the pole. And I done that then, and that's when I met Hal Needham and Bert. And they was coming down there with this guy named Johnny Hayes. I didn't know him, but he was the in-between guy for SCO and NASCAR. And so Johnny, he was motioning me to come after I got off the stage and introduce me. Hal Burt was went back to the motel, and they wanted me to drive second car. I told him I didn't know. I just had to think about it. So anyway, I went home. I got up. But I couldn't go home because they locked the trunk up in my uniform and my clothes and my uniform. No pocket, no billfold, nothing. That sort of teed me off a little bit. Everybody's gone, but their truck is still sitting there. And a boy wrecked, and he's had a torch cutting his car up to put it in the truck. And I borrowed this torch, and I cut the lock off the door, and I put my uniform in my locker and put my clothes back on. And Monday morning when I got up on Rummy real early, I kept calling their Connecticut and I called everywhere. But nobody there. But they went to test with another driver, the Bristol. And people called me, they said, heard I got fired. I answered a phone. I didn't know what is that. And Tom Pistone called me and he said, that Bristol tested was Ronnie Bouchard. He was a modified driver of the day.
Huh.
What? That right. That's my car seat. And that ain't got aggravated me. I sat there a little while. The guy from another called me. He was from California. He was with Hal Needham and them. I called Bud Moore. And they said, you hunting? I said, it looks that way. And the guy that told me come to California, he called me just as quick as I got through talking to him. And he said that they left. They went up there to test. And they would say, I go over to the racetrack, Harry Hyde's shop. He's hunting a driver. And I went in and talked to him. And then I started going down to Bud Moore's, and I just called him. He said, you hunting? I said, yeah. And he says, I got to talk to my people. I'll call you back. So I got back to the house. I just really down and out. You know, Travis called me. So I went down there. And I didn't know him. He said, they're going to run another car. Running two SCO cars. I said, I can't just leave them hanging after I just left there and jump straight up here. I told him, I just couldn't do it. And so he said, well, call Bud up, you know. I made like I did, but then I didn't want to call Bud. Bud, he got a jaw, man. No Bud either. He's something else. I called him up. I got something I got to tell you. He said, what's that? I said, I'm not going to be able to drive your car, Bud. And I know you said you'd let me know if you talk to your people. He said, I done talked. I said, well, I can't. And I was just, all right, I can't do it. He said, I beat you.
Man.
Just left it like that, you know. And he's been one of my best friends ever since then.
Harry, congratulations. This is just so well earned, so well deserved. Really happy to see you with the Blue Jacket in the NASCAR Hall of Fame.
Well, I'm glad to be in here with a lot of good people.
All right, there he is, Harry Gantt, NASCAR Hall of Famer. And what a great way to hear, actually, the origin story, if you will, of him getting into the Skull Bandit. A big congratulations to Kurt Busch, Harry Gantt, and Ray Hendrick, NASCAR Hall of Famers. Congratulations and a great honor to Humpy Wheeler as a Landmark Award recipient. And a big congratulations and another well-deserved honor to Deb Williams going into the NASCAR Hall of Fame as a recipient of the Squire Hall Award.
It's more than a rebellion. When your teen is slipping into drugs or alcohol, when social media and pornography consume their time and their mind, when depression and even suicidal thoughts cast a shadow over your home, as a parent, you feel powerless. There is hope. At Turnabout Ranch, troubled teens step away from the chaos and into a clarity of nature on a working cattle ranch. Care for horses, learn responsibility, build trust, and rediscover purpose. It isn't theory, it's real work, real therapy, real healing. Families from across the country have found transformation right here, just when they thought hope was gone. If your teen is struggling with addiction, harmful online behaviors, even weight management, call right now and get the help you all need.
800-277-1650. 800-277-1650. 800-277-1650. That's 800-277-1650.
This is Christopher Bell, and you're listening to PRN, the Performance Racing Network.
It's hard to believe in this day and age in the United States of America that children are hungry.
Our time on this planet is short. We have to give back to those in need.
Every child has a chance, no matter what obstacles they may encounter.
Never have we been taxed more as a society to help kids the way we are right now.
At Speedway Children's Charities, our mission
is simple.
Help every child we can.
Because all children
deserve joy
and hope
and love.
I'm PRN's Doug Turnbull, co-host of the 5 to Go podcast, a weekly deep dive into five motorsports issues. Devin Kupka gives the Gen Z view.
One thing that I've never seen before, when the cars got four wide, everybody stood up cheering.
And championship-winning mechanic Dan Elliott leans on his decades in the garage and promoting.
Unless everybody is aware of the rules, then no, it's not fair for everyone.
Listen to the 5 to Go podcast on GoPRN.com and subscribe on Apple and Spotify.
Welcome back to Fast Talk here on PRN. Brad Gilley along with Doug Rice, Alexis Erickson. We're going to bring in a couple of different names as well. And Andrew Curlin and David Stiles are the new host of PRN's Garage Pass. This is a show that for many decades was hosted by Mark Garrow with the assist of Steve Richards. And now we get to really freshen things with the retirement of Mark Garrow and refresh them in a big, big way. David Stiles has been with PRN for more than a decade now. Andrew Curlin, our newest hire as well. And David, let Alexis and I start with you first. You've been around Garage Pass for a while. Now you and Andrew get to take the reins. So how's it been here over the first month or so?
Well, it's been very exciting just taking over this show for Mark. He did a great job with it for so many years, built a very big fan base. And it's something that a lot of our radio stations that carry PRN have on their daily docket for NASCAR news. And for me, it's just an opportunity to extend the legacy of the show, and I get to work with a really good broadcaster in Andrew Curlin. So it's been a lot of fun just palling around with him. We've been to North Wilkesboro. We've been to a couple other press events around the Charlotte area, and we're just having a lot of fun with it.
You know, I'm curious, David, because you have been a part of the show in a behind-the-scenes capacity for so long now. What do you think is going to be the future of that show? Brad mentioned a refreshening, if you will, of what that show is going to be and what fans are going to hear and affiliates are going to get. What's your vision for what we'll hear this coming year?
Well, we still have a big focus on the latest news in the sport, but I also think that there's an opportunity for Andrew and myself to give you more of an insider view and some more op-ed or opinion pieces about what's going on around NASCAR. And I think that that's a part of the sport that is not lacking, but I think that it is something that we can bring to the table and offer that on not just social media, but podcasts and on our terrestrial stations.
Andrew, as part of this refresh, I'm also going to call it an upgrade, because what we've really been able to do is strengthen our social media with a lot of fun things. People have heard Garage Pass for decades. They now get to see Garage Pass and a lot of the elements that go into that. So expand upon some of the things that you have going on.
Yeah, I mean, we were at production day and got a lot of great content for, you know, promotions and stuff this, you know, for this upcoming season. But on top of that, there's a lot of NASCAR news and stuff that we will use for Garage Pass on that. And we put a camera up and filmed every driver's reaction. And now we're able to share it on a brand new level. I was watching some clips yesterday. I mean, it felt like a podcast. You know, we were just chatting with these drivers. And so what's great about that is Garage Pass is, it's a 3-minute show, right? It's for our affiliate stations to be able to use. But the social media element really allows us to expand beyond those previous barriers. And if there's a fun moment that maybe can't make the show, I don't want it to go to waste. I like good content. So being able to put it on social media is a game changer, and it's something I'm really excited to chase.
You know, in that same vein, Andrew, we've talked extensively in the preseason about how we want to have some more digital offerings as far as Garage Pass goes, and, you know, offering an extended version that will be digital only. Do you want to talk to the fans about what they'll hear on that?
Yeah, I mean, I like the director's cut version of things. I have a hard time cutting things down. So getting stuff to 3 minutes is difficult for me. It's a learning process, but on podcast platforms, and I know a lot of people that like to get in their cars or trucks and listen to a podcast on their way to work. And I want Garage Pass to be part of that experience for a daily commute, and something that you can turn on and listen to and enjoy a conversation and what Dave and I have to say about the sport. And what's great is it's daily. I mean, you can listen to it on your way to work, and the next day you can do the exact same thing for every single morning routine. So the opportunities for that, I feel like, are pretty endless.
One of the things I really love is that for both of you, we get your unique view of the sport. And it's not just, hey, here's what happened, here's what's happening, you know, straight up news. It's a little opinion and all of that. And David, I know you're a lifelong fan of this sport as well. And just the opportunity to express what you see in a whole different way has been pretty refreshing. So, you know, how for you is it now to be able to have that outlet?
Well, growing up in the mountains of North Carolina, every Sunday I would go to my grandmother's house and we would watch some kind of sporting event. And as a kid, I've got shirts, and if you're here and you take a look in my office, I've got tons of Terry Labonte stuff. That's my guy. So we've got all the Kellogg's and Tony the Tiger. I've even got the Frankenstein Fruit Loop car. So to me, just being a young kid and gravitating to the sport and having a guy to follow each week was just something very cool. And even growing up, I had the backpack. So I've been a lifelong NASCAR fan. And like you said, Brad, this is just a great opportunity to have my version of what I'm seeing and how I take in the sport, and being able to then take that to the listeners and to the fans, to me, is just very cool. And it's a very humbling experience, because it's almost like you're getting to go and talk with your friends every day about it, or your dad or your brother, and now it's with more people. And I think that that's just something very, very cool for me, and I'm just excited to see where we can go with this. It's a lot of fun, and like I said, me and Andrew have had a lot of conversations already, and I think we're getting into the groove of things, and there's just more on the horizon for Garage Pass.
I bet, Andrew, you would echo that lifelong fandom for yourself as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I went to my first race when I was 10 years old, and I fell in love with it. And that's really all I've known for my adult life. I think I've been in the sport for more than half of my life already. And so, I mean, it's ingrained in me for sure.
Yeah, the only difference in Andrew, he still looks the same, except now he's able to grow a beard. yeah, it's a fun thing. All right, when we come back here on Garage Pass, or on Fast Talk, rather, we're going to talk about Garage Pass, but we're going to talk about it not from the perspective of what you get, Monday through Friday. We're going to talk about it in the perspective of what you're going to get. Predictions for this year, some of the things we're looking forward to as far as storylines go in 2026, and what's on your mind as we're actually getting ready to go racing. All of that and more is coming up right after this here on PRN's Fast Talk.
Whether your engine runs daily or only when you need it, Z-Max Micro Lubricant is the force you need against carbon buildup that can damage your engine. Combustion causes carbon and other harmful deposits to build up in your engine, fuel system, and transmission. And carbon is like sandpaper rubbing against your engine's internal parts. You don't want that. You want Z-Max Micro Lubricant. It soaks into metal and keeps your vehicle running at peak performance. Find out more at ZMAX.com or visit us on Facebook and X. Protect your engine to the max with ZMAX.
In addition to traditional summer camp, Victory Junction also hosts family weekends, partner programs, and day camps. And the Victory Junction Outreach Program takes camp fun beyond our gates to children at hospitals and partner sites throughout North Carolina, South Carolina, and Virginia. Victory Junction makes the impossible accessible.
This is a place that needs to be here 50 years from now, 100 years from now. We are never going to run out of kids that can benefit from Victory Junction.
Discover how you can get involved at victoryjunction.org.
This is Kyle Larson, and you're listening to PRN, the Performance Racing Network.
Hi, this is Brett McMillan. Join me each week for the True Reporters Roundtable, known as the Pit Reporters.
This is not what we're used to and accustomed to seeing. That, I think, with a backdrop, is why a lot of fans are a bit sour on Denny.
He still wants to play that role that now Denny has taken on, but him and the A-car haven't had the same success. You can't be the villain, and it doesn't really work as well if you're not winning, and Denny Hamlin is doing just that.
Check us out each week on the Performance Racing Network.
Did you know that 9 out of 10 Americans are sick of the divisions in our country? But there's one small step we can take to remember that we're still connected. All over America, strangers with different political views are coming together to talk about their lives, not politics, and discovering they actually have a lot in common. Because even if we don't see eye to eye, we can still talk heart to heart. So let's talk for a change. Learn more at takeonesmallstep.org.
Welcome back to PRN's Fast Talk. Brad Gilley along with Alexis Erickson. Doug Rice is going to join us again in our next segment. We have Andrew Curlin and David Stiles, the two hosts of PRN's Garage Pass, a long-running show that gets a major refresh here for 2026. And now let's look forward to some of the big storylines. Andrew, we'll start with you. From North Wilkesboro to production days to a big Hendrick Motorsports event day, what are some of the things that you are hearing drivers talk about that are sort of keying you into what might be some of our storylines for this year?
Well, and you guys covered it already, but I wrote down in my notes the chase. I mean, that how we crown our champion, that was the big question mark that we had. And from production days, we got a lot of interesting, varying answers. You know, Denny Hamlin said, this is better. This will allow the cream to rise to the top. We're going to focus on the 5 or 6 stars that we should be focusing on in years past. I found it very interesting that SVG is pro chase, and we'll put that clip out, I'm sure, on our PRN social channels too. But for a guy who I think is literally in a full-time cup ride because of winning, you're in, he likes that format. It's something that makes sense to him with his background from racing in Australia and New Zealand. And then, you know, you got guys like Joey Logano, who says he's a fan of the old format, which, you know, I like the debate, and fans certainly like to voice their opinion about what Logano had to say. And even talking to Bell and Larson, how they have such a rivalry in dirt, and it's them versus the other, and they elevate each other. And how this format opens up that possibility and potential to get and match that same rivalry in NASCAR. I'm excited. I can't wait. So that I've got a lot of other notes, but I'm curious to hear what David has to say too.
It's the fact that we're not going to be looking at the bubble every week, where we're looking down at 16th through 18th, saying who's going to get in, who's not going to get in. It will be a bigger focus on who is more consistent. And Andrew, I think it's interesting that you mentioned SVG. he was part of the win and you're in mentality where you bring him into the sport to win these road courses to then get into the playoffs. But that can still happen because there's so many points caught up in these wins. If he goes out and wins two or three of these road courses here in 2026, he'll get 55 points at the minimum right. for those. And he'll put himself in a good points lead as he gets closer to the end of the regular season and into the chase. So I think that this format is good for drivers that are very consistent. And someone that comes to mind is Chris Buescher, Alex Bowman. Both of those guys, super consistent. They may not win every week, but they're super consistent. So I would, you know, dog ear their names or mark them down as they might have a stellar 2026.
Cars on track this weekend at Bowman Gray. Both of you attended recently a tire test, package test at North Wilkesboro. Obviously not a one-to-one comparison, but did you learn anything from what you saw at that event that we might, you know, translate into to our first quote-unquote race of the year?
It's hard to say. You know, they were testing 750 horsepower. Drivers were saying, you know, you feel it towards the tail end of a run. Bowman Gray is going to be its own beast. And talking to some crew chiefs this week about the colder temperatures, it's going to come into play. I mean, Cliff Daniels said that the great equalizer will be that halfway point when we can start and make adjustments and be able to work on our cars because there's just so much unknown. After talking in production day and going to the Hendrick Motorsports event, a lot of teams missed the mark last year. They did not have a very big notebook. And so I'd be curious to see what teams learned and how they go back and apply it. I'm hoping for a free-for-all like we saw last year, but I think it'll be a little bit more controlled and calculated chaos just because this is the second time we're going.
And as far as the test goes, they were throwing a lot at these drivers at North Wilkesboro. It wasn't just the 750 horsepower package. They're also trying out some new tires. Chevy was trying the new body out for the first time. Yeah. And then, you know, some different aero packages and then camber. So that was one of the things that Ross Chastain hit on. We asked him, do you feel a big difference in the shift in horsepower? And he said, no, not really. I feel a bigger difference in the camber of the car because we're changing the geometry of the way the tire sits on the track. So there's all these different pieces that go into this new package, and I'm excited to see it on these short tracks and these road courses.
Silly season is going to be one of those for sure. And drivers like Alex Bowman, they're in a contract year, as well as several others. David, I'll start with you. On track is one story. Off track is another story. And I think we're going to have an abundance of those this year as well.
Like you said, Alex Bowman in a contract year. He's an 8-time race winner at Hendrick Motorsports, and he's paired up with crew chief Blake Harris. So we'll see what he can do this season. He's been pretty consistent. Again, he had a chance to be up in the top, 5-6 in points early in the year, and then something kind of happened, and they fell off towards the tail end and middle part of the season last year. So we'll see what that can do. Also, we've got new drivers in new places. Daniel Suarez at Spire, he's now over there with teammate Michael McDowell. I thought it was funny to see them earlier this week. They had a sparring match, kind of boxing, because, you know, those two actually got in a fight a few years ago. So it'll be interesting to see how those two drivers kind of mesh. And, you know, we're also, you've got Carson Hocevar over there. He's a new up-and-comer.
I know we got to go to break, but real quick, Kyle Busch, and how is that going to work with his new crew chief? I'm blanking on his name. He was just an All-Irish crew chief last year. Jim Pullman, thank you. Is Jim Pullman going to be the fix for Kyle Busch? I think that's the big question mark that I have.
Yeah, for sure. All right, when we come back, we're going to bring Doug Rice back into the fold. We're going to wrap things up as we are going racing this weekend right here on Fast Talk.
Hey, listen, are you a 50-year-old person looking for term life insurance? Then you need to talk to Bob. Bob specializes in helping people find $1 million or more of term life insurance for a couple of $100 a month. Look, you need to know there's a price war in the term life insurance business, and you may be paying too much. Call Bob, and he'll shop and see how much money he can save you. Look, this could be the last term life insurance policy you ever have. Your rates are guaranteed for the next 20 years. That's right, guaranteed level rates for the next 20 years. And if you're a smoker or your health is not perfect, Bob has great rates for you too. So for $1 million of term life insurance coverage for a couple of $100 a month. Call Bob right now. 800-509-1741. 800-509-1741. 800-509-1741. That's 800-509-1741. Paid for by Term Direct.
This is Carson Hocevar, and you're listening to the PRN, the Performance Racing Network.
Hey, it's Charlie and Debbie, along with NASCAR legend Kyle Petty, inviting you to join us for Kyle Petty's Back Then Again Country Countdown.
Each week, we'll put it in reverse and take a trip down memory lane, looking back at that week's top 20 country songs from years past.
We'll dive into what made those songs and artists move the needle, what pop culture trends made those years unique.
And you'll get to hear me tell stories only I can tell.
So don't miss Kyle Petty's Back Then Again Country Countdown right here each week.
In Iraq, our truck hit a roadside bomb. I had about 16 surgeries on my hand so that I could regain function. And when I came home, I needed a new roof due to a storm. And I was about to lose homeowners insurance as well. I applied for Operation Homefront Critical Financial Assistance Program. And it's good to know that when we come home, there are people who are there that care about us. Operation Homefront, they've really been a blessing.
Back with the group here on Fast Talk, talking about Brad Gelley and Alexis Erickson. I'm Doug Rice. And Brad, I know you had the honor to talk with the two new Hall of Famers, Kurt Busch and Harry Gant. Great conversations with those guys. But I do want to mention a couple of other folks. Obviously, modified superstar Ray Hendrick put in this most recent class. And two people I think that are a little bit closer to what we're all about. One is the late Humpy Wheeler, the longtime president of Charlotte Motor Speedway, and then Deb Williams, UPI reporter, and probably one of the first female journalists to ever cover racing, back even when women were not allowed in the garage area. Let's get your take on Humpy, Brad.
Number one, the first thing that comes to mind is I'm glad Humpy was still with us to know that he was a recipient of the Landmark Award. That was so meaningful to see him there on voting day at the Hall of Fame, that and him knowing he was going to get that. But number two, what he did to really revolutionize the sport of NASCAR from an entertainment standpoint. While Humpy had nothing to do with that, what happened actually on the racetrack, that is the sport itself, he had everything to do with the excitement off the racetrack, from thrill shows to sticking his head in a tiger's mouth to his predictions for the All-Star race and all of the great fan-friendly, fan-forward events, and just mindset, the way he did things. Humpy is so well-deserving to be enshrined in the Hall of Fame, and I'm so happy he was a recipient of the Landmark Award.
And maybe one of the biggest splashes he ever made was bringing Janet Guthrie down after she failed to make the Indy 500 to start. It was 50 years ago in the then World 600, and made huge splash, and I think change the racing landscape going forward. Deb Williams, somebody that we know and have spent a lot of time with, Alexis, also gets in. She receives the very prestigious Squire Hall Award admission to the NASCAR Hall of Fame.
She has been in this industry for decades, a trailblazer to say the least when it comes to what women have been able to accomplish in this sport. You know, you've told stories about how long you've had, friendship with Deb Williams. And I just talked to her the other day. She's president of the NMPA. We were talking business about that. And she told me a story about you guys having known each other for decades and mm-hmm. how she would call you every morning. Can you tell that story quickly for the fans? I
was working in local radio in Salisbury, North Carolina, a station that Kent Bernhardt and I both worked at. And I was the morning person at the time. And I would be constantly calling United Press International in Raleigh to get the updated weather forecast. This is when the weather came literally over a teletype machine. And I struck up a friendship with Deb because she was always the person that answered the phone, and found out we both really loved racing. And she talked all the time about, wow, if I could just ever get a job, if I could ever get my foot in the door, I would love to cover racing, but I don't know if that I can. They don't allow women. And, you know, and both of us, from those discussions 50 years ago, wound up getting to work in the sport together. So I'm really happy for her. And I'll echo what Brad said about Humpy. I'm glad that Humpy was still alive when he received his landmark award and got into the Hall of Fame, because it would have felt cheated had he not known that. PRN gets out of the box pretty early, Alexis.
It's so funny because people talk a lot about the off season, and we talk a lot about how there is no off season. There's a non-racing season, because I would say January is our busiest month of the year. But yeah, I mean, Echo Park Speedway, I should say, in Atlanta is going to come before you know it. So we're ready to hit the ground running.
Nice to be on with the crew again, and looking forward to the clash at Bowman Gray. We'll talk about that next week, and we'll be back next week with a whole bunch more Fast Talk.
Fast Talk was presented by Toyota. For the latest Toyota Gazoo racing information, visit TGRNA.com. And by Sunoco. From NASCAR to your car, Sunoco Fuel helps your car reach peak performance. This is PRN, the Performance Racing Network.